Welcome to the Cashflow Legends Podcast with your hosts, Nate, Brandon, and Brock. Remember, our insights are not direct financial advice, so consult with your financial team before making any decisions based on the topics discussed in this show. Welcome back to Cashflow Legends, where we teach you how to keep more of the money that you make so you can earn more on what you keep. We are joined today by Brock's good friend, Jeremy Resmer. And so we're just going to hang out, have a fun conversation. I think it'd be cool for Brock to just kind of introduce Jeremy, and then we'll see where it goes from here.
Thanks, Nate. My friend, Jeremy. My good friend, Jeremy. We go way back, a couple of years, served together at church, hang out a bunch together, small group together. And we do business together along with life. So I'm excited to have you on the call today, Jeremy. You have a very interesting story of where you were to where you are today. So why don't we first start of you telling us your story about, you know, the short clips would be, you know, you're go to college, you're playing basketball, then you go to the jungles of Africa, then you start running things on a business, your marketing guru, and then you fall into real estate. Why don't you tell us all
yeah.
that?
Yeah, so I feel like I've lived 8 of my 9 lives. I'm 43, got it right this time. I just turned 43 not too long ago. And man, I feel like I've moved around a lot. Early life, grew up in Michigan, outside Detroit. My whole family was a sports junkie. My dad played basketball in college. My brother made the baseball team at Michigan and then quit because he wanted to party. And like, that's just what we did. My mom played. So I was, you know, in the gym on the, you know, sports fields all my life. And so I played basketball in college, went to Michigan Tech, had a finance degree. And then coming out, it was funny because I couldn't find a job. Everyone's like, yeah, we'll hire a financial analyst. And, you know, but, you know, we're looking for 10 years experience. So I'm like, where does a guy like that, you know, like, how do I start? So anyways, I, you know, had a couple of side jobs here and there, but basically decided, you know what, now is the time. If I'm going to go travel, I'm going to go do it. So went to Kenya in the middle of nowhere, a 90, I don't know, I think he was 91 or 92 at the time, 92-year-old gentleman had lived there and basically created this little mission, and he was helping local people. And it was in the middle of nowhere where, dude, you wake up with a cup of coffee and you're like, oh my gosh, look at the elephants, or holy cow, a leopard just killed our dog last night, security dog. So kind of crazy, but it was awesome for a young guy starting out. So that gave me a lot of weird, interesting experience of like how to be open to really, really interesting, unique, uncertain situations. From there, traveled quite a bit, came back to the States, got into financial, like corporate financial planning, and also started doing some things in the fashion industry. Was doing the production for a boutique women's clothing brand. We were selling to, you know, people like Jessica Simpson, Halle Berry were wearing all the clothes. So it's really crazy. And I was back and forth between this weird kind of world where I was in this fashion world doing financial stuff and production planning, and I was downtown LA. And then finally, a buddy of mine, we went and started our own business, and he said, hey, let's create something really cool for dudes. And so I moved to New York, hired a designer, was like manufacturing in Brazil, Pakistan, Turkey, didn't know what the heck I was doing, right? So I just took the leap. And anyways, that was a really, really interesting experience. But I had some really good mentors along the way, and got to do some hardcore financial stuff, financial planning. Got involved in a tech company in the Bay Area. So I'm just kind of telling you the snippets, but I went from like downtown LA to the Bay Area to New York, back to California. After my clothing business, which I thought was going to blow up, absolutely thought it was a home run. We're just going after people like Tom Brady and some other big time sponsors. We had connections and athletes wearing our clothes. And literally the, you know what happened 2007, 2008, there was this thing that kind of happened around the world where, you know, it shook the world up. So we were in the process of a 90-day raise, and a 90-day raise in that in that world. It was kind of a long time, and we were waiting for the funds to hit the account. Lehman Brothers goes down, Bear Stearns goes down, and all of a sudden our investors are like, yeah, like we're out. Like people aren't going to be paying $300 for jeans, and you know, they don't care about these nice shirts. Like clothing's going to take a back seat. Like an investment bank, two investment banks just collapsed. So anyways, you know, continuing on, I literally shut down the business. This was for me the longest, like the biggest failure of my life. I didn't take a salary for a year and a half, 100K in debt, had people to pay back. I wasn't going to go BK. Just a lot of crazy things happening. So I was like, you know what? I'm determined to figure this out. Called all my suppliers and just let them know, hey, I can't pay you right now, but if you're willing to do a payment plan, I'll pay you back. So I just was, I was like relentless. I wasn't going to just give up and hang these people out to dry. So I was able to fortunately meet my lovely wife. I went back to Kenya a couple of years later. I still had all this debt, and my wife and I had a really cool story, and we took care of this little girl who didn't have a mom and she needed a surgery. So we needed to take her several hours away. And so we got to play mom and dad. I didn't even know my wife at the time. I literally showed up and she's like, we got to go to Nairobi. We were like 5 hours away. So I'm just like, you can't go alone. Like I lived there previously. So I knew, you know, the roads and, you know, some of the pitfalls and dangers and all that. And I'm like, this lady can't just hop on a bus and go from the middle of nowhere. It's crazy. So anyways, we moved back to the States, and my wife and I ended up getting married, moved to Colorado, moved back to Tennessee, and I ended up working for a nonprofit for 5.5 years, and I'm traveling all over the world, not making a lot of money, just barely making ends meet. We had our son, and then my wife and I decided to adopt, and we ended up having all sorts of complications with the adoption. We ended up living in Congo for 2 years. I'm working nonprofit. I'm traveling to Haiti. I'm traveling to Guatemala. I'm in Ethiopia, Uganda. Literally, when all this stuff happened and we had to go, I told my boss, I was like, hey, man, is it okay if I go and work from the Congo? I'll figure out a way to make this work. And he's like, yes. I'm like, Scott, that was his name. Scott, thank you so much. If you would have told me no, I was going to give you my resignation right now. So my wife and I up and left in 2014. Dude, that was 10 years ago. And I did that for a couple more years. I was literally had two computers from the Congo because we usually didn't have power. So we would have a generator or the power in the local area would kick on at like 10 at night. It would go to like 7 in the morning, and then boom, we'd have breakfast and boom, the power goes out. So this is a crazy story, guys. I don't know if you want to hear all of this, but the fact of the matter is I was like, you know what? I got to figure out a way to make some money. So I did some day trading, if you will. I was buying Facebook and Google stock from the Congo. I had two computers set up. My computers lasted about 5 to 6 hours. My Mac always lasted longer, so I got a little bit of juice from that. Once the one died, I would go to the other one. And then when everyone else on my team was waking up in the United States or around the world, then all of a sudden I'd have that other computer to do work there. And so started another business, online business, helping other families how to adopt debt-free, and did that from the Congo. And when I came back, my wife and I were having all sorts of problems. It was really hard to readjust. I now had 3 kids instead of 1 child, just a lot of things going on. So here's where we kind of get to the real estate piece, which is I was having all these health issues, all these issues with my wife and my family, didn't have enough money. And I was just like, I got to make a change. So I heard a guy named Tom Kroll, Wholesaling Inc. at the time. I think he's since sold it. But I heard him on Bigger Pockets, and this guy was ringing the bell. He had so much energy. And at the very end, he said, hey, man, yeah, if you want to get in touch with me, you know, we have a course teaching wholesaling. I'm like, yep. I literally reached out to him, booked a call, talked to him, told my wife, hey, I need to do this. She's like, I believe in you. Let's do it. And so put $5,000 on a credit card, and voila, got into real estate. Didn't know what the heck I was doing, but I took massive imperfect action and just did what this guy told me and tried to figure out one problem at a time.
Dude, and that's the beginning overnight. Of the story.
Yeah, yeah, right.
That's overnight. Now, just to be clear, like you kind of dropped down there, but you didn't actually go into the whole thing. But your wife's not from Kenya. Y'all just met in Kenya.
We met there. Yeah. So my wife was living in Georgia at the time. She had been working for a nonprofit, sending teams overseas, partnering ministries. It was actually a sports ministry where, you know, there were, Hey, there she is, or somebody is, my son. That maybe. That's Justice. Yeah. So my wife was sending teams overseas doing missions work, and basically they would play basketball, they would do camps, or maybe like ultimate frisbee in Burma, where they didn't let anybody in that was Christian, but they would, through sports, allow missions teams in to be able to interact, engage with the community, and even share the gospel. So it's kind of crazy. So my wife packed her bags and, it just said, I'm going to Kenya. I don't know how long I'm going to be there. She was working on behalf of another organization. And so our paths crossed at this little mission place. So it's crazy.
It is. Lori's incredible. And don't be afraid to hold back on the whole faith part, because we talk about it a lot on this, this podcast. So you do all these things, you travel the world, you meet your wife, you go from no kids to one kid to three kids. And
now I have four, because we've since adopted again. It was unplanned. Yep. It just happened, but it's been great.
Yep. And so now you're in the world of real estate. So you started wholesaling. Kind of tell us your progression of, did you start with one? Did you start with maybe 20, like how did you step into real estate?
Selling course. So literally I was terrible. I had two deals. Okay. Right out of the gates. Like I was the guy in the course that I just took action really quick, and I was like, whatever, I've got nothing to lose. And so I would ask questions like really quick. I was getting, I was sending out direct mail and I was getting responses. I had two deals locked up in the first probably 30 days. So I'm like, dude, I'm going to blow the top off this thing. I'm going to make so much money, right? That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, this is so good. This is amazing. So I get into those deals. We go through, get the title work back. And this is the craziest thing ever, but on both deals, one of them was an estate issue. The attorney actually structured the estate like the worst that my title attorney had ever seen. And because this, the owner of the property, her parents passed away and she was able to live in the house, but she couldn't sell it. And so it would have been passed down to a, like her niece who was a minor. It was really, really complicated. There were a lot of different factors, but basically she couldn't even sell the house. So she ended up losing it to tax sale. And I had that thing locked up, and then I went and assigned it like the very next day for $30,000. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to crush this thing. And then I find out about a week or week and a half later when title comes back, hey man, like this is one of the most messed up files we've seen. You're not going to be able to do anything. So I couldn't save the deal. So there's number one. Literally the very next week, I had a similar situation, different title issues, but it was encumbered in such a way where I couldn't do the deal. And I also had another $30,000 assignment fee. So in between this time, right, I'm like, oh my gosh. All right, what's next? How do I invest in other marketing channels? So then I invest. I'm like, oh, should I do SEO or PPC? And I'm like, oh, well, you know, I didn't know at the time. I'm like, let's do SEO. Let's own the real estate. So I go after this this firm that is highly regarded. It's like $2,500 a month and a 12-month commit. So I jump in thinking I've got $60,000. I'm going to reinvest in my business. Two deals, crash and burn. The money, it doesn't work out. I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like flipping out. This is where I was afraid to tell my wife for like at least 30 days. Because what I didn't tell you guys is what my wife agreed to. So, you know, she's cool with the uncertainty too, as long as like there's a vision and a plan. So how I got started was, yes, I put the $5,000 on a credit card, but I went and took a HELOC out and pulled $60,000. The only equity we had no savings, nothing, pulled the equity out. And so $60,000, well, now I just spent and committed a whole lot of money, and I'm spending money on marketing, got the course. And so nothing was coming in. And literally my first deal I found on Craigslist, and this is a glorious story in and of itself. So it's right downtown Nashville, right by the Titan Stadium on Shelby Ave. And this guy tried selling it to like five different people. No one could figure out a solution. And he kept saying, Jeremy, there's something about you. I just trust you. And I just think you can get this done. And I'm like, listen, his name was Ken. I'm like, Ken, I'm going to do everything in my power. I will figure out a solution. I do not know how, but I'll make it happen. So Long story short, I buy the property and I have to take out a hard money loan, have no idea what I'm doing, right? So it's like a 12-2. I signed my life away. It's $255,000 I bought the property for. It needed a lot of work. Awesome property, but it needed a lot of work. Anyways, I buy this thing and, or I was trying to assign it is what was happening, and I couldn't assign it. So then I have to close on it. And then I find out after I close on it, right, that it's a historical property, which a historical property means now you have to go to the historic board, right? And you have to find out, hey, can I, like, what paint colors can I use? And for me, I had this grand plan where I was going to go and renovate it myself. I was going to adjust the footprint. I was going to make it two stories, and I was going to sell this thing and make a ton of money. Well, a really, really sweet, kind realtor lady actually approached me, and, you know, she saw when I was marketing the contract. She's like, hey, do you know that this is historic? I'm like, no, I have no idea. She goes, okay, well, here's the phone number. Why don't you give them a call? So what ended up being this grand plan turned into, oh crap, I can't really do hardly anything to this property. It needs a whole lot of work. But if I go and spend money, but I can't do the things I want to do, it's just going to be wasted. So I literally spent like $2,000. My father-in-law is a contractor. And I said, hey, if can you do me a favor? Let's come in and do some cosmetic things and try to sell this thing. So I had it sold at like $325, and then I kid you not, a realtor literally killed my deal. The realtor, I was selling it off market, and the realtor got involved and said, no, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. I already had it in writing with the seller, but the realtor came in, and I wasn't going to fight it. Anyways, long story short, I made every mistake in the book, every mistake in the book. And I still was able to turn around and sell it for $300,000. And after it was all said and done, I made $14,000. And this was a total mess. I did everything wrong that you could imagine. But I found my first deal on Craigslist and was like, you know what? If I can make this work, and didn't have a clue what I was doing, but just was like relentless, I'm like, I can make this thing work. So I found myself having more success flipping houses, but it was causing so much brain damage, because contractors are like, yeah, man, I'll be there tomorrow at 7. And I'm like, okay, great. I've got the other guy coming in right after you. So you got to be there and you got to finish up. And then I call him and he doesn't answer. And like 9:30, and he's like, hey man, what's up? I'm like, you tell me, where are you at? Oh, I'm in Memphis. I'm like, dude, you were supposed to be here at 7. Like, we're waiting on you. Right. So what I'm getting at, guys, is I made every mistake in the book. I thought I was going to wholesale. I started flipping, was terrible at it, got a little bit better, finally figured out, hey, other people are having success with wholesaling, kept trying, kept just being uncomfortable, finally figured out wholesaling. Then we started having some land deals come across our desk. And I'm like, holy crap, we can make some really good money off of land deals. And so that started working. And then in 2019, I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy my first rental. And I bought it in Clarksville. And I told this lady four different times. She's like, Jeremy, I trust you. She's this French lady. And she would say these, oh, hey, Jeremy, I want you to buy my house. And I had no idea, right? No idea. Like, I'm like, ma'am, I can't buy your house. I'm like, you want 125. I'm at like 65. So she kept calling me back and I kept telling her no. Finally, on the fifth time, she said, let's just make this work. I said, all right. I said, here's where I'm at. I'm at 65. You're at 125. I'm like, the best I can do. She asked me, what's the best you can do? I said, I can do 75,000. She goes, do 77. It's a deal. That was my first rental property in Clarksville. It was a 4-2. I bought it for 77,000. It rents today for 1500 a month. It's worth 205,000. It was a smoking deal. But the best part is when I did that first deal, I'm like, holy crap, this isn't that hard. So I was smart about, lucky, you're smart, whatever you want to call it, about having a property manager, where I said, I never want to manage a property. I'm always going to work that number into the deal. So my property manager was great. He came with me, said, yeah, this is an awesome deal. Managed the whole process for me. Well, we went from one house to 50 doors in 11 months. And wow. In that time, here's what's crazy. So in that time, I started to figure out land. Land got really profitable for me. I'm like, holy cow, this is so good. I might just convert to doing land all the time. And then I got an 8-unit apartment building for $170,000 in Clarksville. Average rents on it on an 8-unit building. Okay, this was in 2020. I bought this thing. Average rents were $400. In 2020, that's insane. So literally our property manager's like, Jeremy, we can immediately, rents should go up at least $200. And like, there's nothing else around it for that same price. So we were able to do well on that. And then lo and behold, literally they say, once you find your first multifamily, you'll find your next one like really, really fast after that. And again, guys, I have no idea what I'm doing. Okay. At the time, I didn't know anything. I'm just like, let's go. There's an opportunity here. Let's push. So I'm just like, just driving, like trying to figure out how to make this work, you know, extracting any value I can. So this guy comes to me with 19 units. He's like, hey, I got this building. I think it's a decent deal. I'm like, hey, here's where I need to buy it at. And he goes, all right, let me see if I can make some, you know, adjustments in price with the seller. He comes back to me. He goes, Jeremy, I'm giving you first crack. I trust you. You bought another deal from me. And so literally he lets me go see it. I get my property manager. We buy a 19-unit apartment building in Clarksville, Tennessee for, I think it was $650,000. And we gave a $50,000 assignment fee. So that was kind of the start of it. And so ever since then, I kind of made a pivot in 2020. I found a guy in South Carolina, who like, I was looking for another market, guys, because I was so in the business. I was doing the marketing. I was going on the appointments. I was managing crews, and literally I would leave like at 5 a.m. before my kids got up. And then I would come home and like, I'd have an hour with my kids. Maybe I had a little time with my wife. We'd talk or whatever. And then she'd go to bed and I literally would be trying to like put stuff in the CRM and prep for the next day. And oh shoot, we need supplies. And I'm getting text messages from all these people. It was a disaster. I'm like, I can't live this way. And so finally I was like, okay, I got to get into a different market. My parents had lived in Myrtle Beach at the time, South Carolina. I knew it. I'd been going down there since I was, my first year I was born, and we had vacation there. So I did some research and I'm like, holy crap, this is totally a fragmented market dominated by realtors. I'm like, I can come in there. I think I can come in here and do pretty well. And so that was in 2020. And guys, literally I've shifted my business almost from like 100% buying in the Nashville area. And we were able to hit 7 figures in 2020 to we were able to do 7 figures in like 18 months in South Carolina in the Myrtle Beach market. And we do about 100 deals a year. Right now I've got 35 properties in escrow. I've got a few land deals. I've got house deals. I just put another apartment building under contract. I sent the contract yesterday. I'm trying to put it under today. And so we buy houses, we buy land, we buy rentals, we flip, we wholesale, we kind of do it all. And I have a really strong team. So fortunately I found my thoroughbred in South Carolina and I made this big shift. And so where I'm focusing on is, hey, how can I be a visionary and a leader and, you know, help to build out our team and our culture? And then my job is to make sure the phones are always ringing. So what marketing channels are we running? What's happening there? And then my guy in South Carolina, my partner there, he's making sure that, you know, things there are being handled well. So we've got, I think, a team of 11. I've got 3 acquisition managers, 1 land acquisition guy, 2 house acquisition manager. And then we do some in Nashville too. So just maybe a small percentage. So I've got 1 acquisition guy here. So anyways, it's grown from me not knowing anything to holy crap, this is unsustainable. I have no life. This is a really actually underpaid job for the amount of hours I was working. And so I just made a big shift and said, I want to be a business owner and I want to have a life. And man, that's kind of my long and short of it, man. There's a lot of things that happened in between. I failed so many times, made every mistake in the book, cried myself to sleep, wondered how I was going to close on deals. I didn't have a clue. And I just was like, all right, what do I got to do right now? What problem do I need to solve? And then just moved on to the next one. Now I'll shut up because I've been rambling here.
Yeah, I should have apologized first to everybody who listens to these on 2x speed. I should have put a reminder that said, this is not a 2x speed podcast. This is a 1x.
Yeah, man, I love your story. I love your energy. one of the things that when we're talking about real estate, reminds me of Doors. And so this was something that happened recently. We go to this Mexican restaurant all the time. It's my wife's favorite. And the way it's decorated inside is there's bamboo all over the walls. And I couldn't even tell you how many times we've been there, how many times we've even sat at the table we were sitting at the other night. But I'm sitting there, my back's up against the wall. My chair's not all the way up against the wall, but my back's up against the wall, or my back's facing the wall. And all of a sudden, one of the staff members from the kitchen like comes around and comes behind me and walks in a door that I didn't even know was there. And I kind of had this moment where almost like the Spirit of God just kind of spoke into my heart. It was just like, hey, there's doors that you don't even see. And, you know, the beginning of your journey into real estate was that course, you know, trying to figure out what you were going to do. And then all of a sudden, you know, there it was. That wasn't a door that you saw, but there it was. And just created this really awesome story from where you are right now. One of the things I'm curious about is like, what is the value of mentorship been for you along your journey?
Oh yeah. So this is my soapbox, because I believe that you have to invest in yourself. And listen, if you want to do the YouTube, like, you know, go watch these people that are sharing things on YouTube, that's great. That probably gets you, so you can learn how to buy your first house from someone on YouTube, and you might do really, really well in spite of yourself.
What is the importance of mentorship? And that's where we'll start.
Yeah. So I think the value of coaching and mentorship has been huge. This is an issue for me that I see a lot of people, you know, going to YouTube and saying, oh, you don't need to pay for that. Oh, it's not worth it. Or, oh, I don't have the money for that. And I actually look at it the opposite way, because for me, look at the people who are representing you. If you ever have a legal issue, that's an attorney, right? What if you ever need surgery? Do you want the guy that, again, no offense to the guy that went to, you know, community college and then to a lesser place, but like they've, no matter where the doctor went, right? Wherever the doctor went, they then had to go to medical school, and then they had to do their residency. So I'm cool if a doctor's competent. I don't care where they went to school. But the thing that you can't avoid is they had to have had a certain amount of training. They had to pass a certain amount of, you know, proficiencies and whatever. But if it's me, I'm going to go for the guy that has gone to the most prestigious probably residency, or he's a specialist, right? So it just depends what your mindset is. But those guys, they didn't just start. They weren't just like, yeah, I'm going to be a doctor. Okay, cool. Let's buy a couple of, you know, stethoscope and they can just be a doctor. They practice. No, they invested, right? They invested time, and people invested into them. And so they're the best at what they do because they had people that were already the best at what they were doing. And so my feeling is, listen, if you want to go and do something really, really well, like, I prefer to be the best. So I thought, man, Tom Kroll is a beast. I love the guy's energy. I resonate with him. He's crushing it. I want to go learn from him. So there's other guys out there too. It's the same way in every field. And so I feel like you're trading time for money. If I didn't have someone coaching me, it would have been really hard for me to get started. I wouldn't have known where to start. I would have wasted money on a lot of different things. And I still wasted money. But the fact is, I had enough direction where I was like, you know what? It doesn't matter. I'm burning the ships. There's no plan B. This is, I got to make this work. If someone else can make it work, I can make it work. And so I've invested in a coach who taught me how to purchase apartment buildings, a land coach. We've done masterminds. I've done, you know, 2 days where you pay $10,000, go out to Utah, you pay your way plus the 10,000. It's like, and at the time it's like, I didn't really have that money, but I look at it and I say, hey, like, they're going to open up their whole business. These guys are doing 100 to 200 deals a year. So I'm going to find that money somehow, some way, because I want to be the best. And in order for me to become the best, I have to go learn from the best, and I have to network with people who are dealing with the same issues that I'm having. But guess what? We're doing things really, really the same, except for this little piece over here. And you make that tweak, and you make this tweak, and you make this tweak. All of a sudden, boom, my business, literally from that year, that investment, my business went from, I think we did 28 deals in South Carolina that year to like 46 deals. It's like, okay, like the little tweaks, like things people don't tell you. If you're doing postcards, don't send it with a man's name. Send it with a female's name because people respond better. You're going to get a higher call rate. Like I tell people that all the time. They're like, oh, really? Well, where'd you find that out? I'm like, because I test it. I've been doing this for a long time, but guess what? Actually, somebody else told me that who tested it first. And then they told me, go do it yourself and tested it. And I did. And it's like, holy crap, the phones are ringing. Like they're ringing more than they were. So it's like these little nuances. You get those from coaches, from people who have been there and done it. And so I look at it and I say, dude, you don't have the money not to do it. Because if you go and do it yourself and you spend this $5,000 that you're going to spend anyways on marketing, why not just have a coach tell you the right way to do it and then spend the money in the right place and then have a return on that initially and have that coach help coach you through. Now, all of a sudden you're avoiding all these other pitfalls. What you're doing is you're going to revenue faster. And so most people are looking at the cost. And I look at the investment and the revenue. Tom always says, hey, keep revenue in first position. And I believe like I learned that from him. And what I love is he was always saying, hey, you know, you got to push forward and you got to get to revenue. My goal is to get you to revenue in 90 days. And he's like, we're going to cover this investment in this program. And that's the thing. Like, You can get there without it, but I see all these people like slamming gurus and coaches, and I'm like, hey, to each his own. But what I can tell you is, I've probably spent, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand dollars on coaching, and I would say my level of investment's relatively small compared to other people that do similar amount of deals as me. But I'm in a mastermind. I was in a mastermind last year. You know, I'm still part of different coaching groups. We still have interactions with people on Facebook. So I guess to answer your question, like I believe that if I want to be the best, I got to go learn from the best. So I would tell anybody in any field, hey, whatever it is that you're going to do, go find the guy that's already doing exactly that. You know, if you want to do long-term rentals, don't go get coached by someone that does short-term rentals. If you want to do flipping, don't go fire a coach that's a great wholesaling coach. Like do the thing you want to do. If you want to flip, go find someone that's flipping 100, 200 deals a year and they have a flat out process nailed. And like, they will show you, they'll give you the keys to the kingdom and you'll get to revenue faster. You'll get to profitability faster. They'll probably teach you how to scale and do it right without losing your mind and your money. So anyways. That's where I'm at.
We are very much aligned in that. And that is a beautiful soapbox. So as we begin to wrap up our time here together, you know, Jeremy, you're a real estate investor. You just kind of told us a lot about the properties that you own, the things that you do. And believe it or not, you actually use whole life insurance.
Yep.
Why don't you kind of talk to us a little bit about your world as a real estate investor and your ability to use life insurance?
Yeah. So one of the things I learned a couple of years ago, when I first learned about overfunded whole life policies, it blew my mind. I'm like, this is not real. This is a scam. And I saw a guy on YouTube talking about it and I'm like, nah, I don't believe it. No way. And I started digging into it. I'm like, oh my gosh, like if this is real, this is a game changer. Like, why did nobody tell me this? None of the financial people, my parents, nobody told me about this. And most of the people around me didn't have whole life, or the ones that that did, they just had traditional whole life and like, eh, you know, it's okay. I've got it. I can pull money from it. But like they weren't using it the way this guy described. And so the more I dug into it and other people were, you know, talking about it again, this is where I learned about it was YouTube first. Okay. So kind of a similar situation where it's like, okay, I'm hearing about it there, which is cool. But then I started to go and meet with people that were actually writing policies that were doing, you know, creating their own bank. And so I probably talked to four or five different people, saw what their credentials were, what their experience was. And I'm like, holy crap, like these guys are helping me to design a policy, what to look out for, what to avoid. And, you know, we ended up taking the dive. I had to convince my wife and, you know, now she says like at the time, she's like, oh, this is a lot of money. I don't know if we're going to be able to do this, but now she's like, hey, why didn't we put more money in that policy? And I'm like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? And so this was our first step in. I wanted to convince my wife, but here's the thing. We're going to Italy. And again, I'll get to real estate in a second, but like we're going to Italy in June. We're taking all of our kids. So we just said, hey, we'll go put all of the expenses on the front end on our credit card. So we're going to get our credit card points, right? And then instead of pulling any of the regular cash, we're going to actually pull from the policy. And then we have a plan to pay the policy back. We already started to do that, but we're constantly able to use that money if we want to. And that policy actually functions as our savings. We don't want to keep money in the banks. We don't know what's going to happen with banks. We don't know if there's going to be bail-ins, but the reality is we want to be out of the banking system. And so we're trying to create our own banking system. So that's my wife's policy. And that's kind of our savings. We can use it. And, you know, if we want to go on vacations or do whatever, we don't typically do that. But it's an option, right? Like that's what that's for. We pay it back. We're good bankers. For me and my policy, that's exclusively for real estate, right? So you can kind of do this however you want. This is the beauty of it is like, what do you want? You know, some people would say, oh, I'll never do that for vacations. Okay, that's great. That's for you. That's your banking system. My banking system is I've got one policy for my wife right now, and that's the savings. And then I've got my policy where I started scraping money out of my business. And 2 years ago, I had everything in my business. If something went really, really bad, that's gone. Poof. Like, that money goes away. And so I'm like, shoot, I can't let one deal take me down. So I started putting money into that policy right away once I got it. And the very first year, this was my first deal. I'll give you two different examples of deals, but I love my policy because the very first time I borrowed from it, we had an opportunity to buy four single family houses. The guy was a trucker. And he had taxes coming up. He didn't want to pay the taxes. There were a few minor tenant issues, actually repairs and maintenance that needed to be done. He had no money. And so he was on the road. He couldn't manage this thing. And he's just like, I just want it gone. So we literally bought four single family houses for $110,000. Okay. Now, this is what's crazy is we went in there actually before closing. One of the ladies actually had a child, a baby, and sewage was coming up from the septic. Disgusting, right? And she couldn't bathe her child. So we went in there before we closed. We said, screw it. We had our property manager in there. She fixed all that. We had our guys fix the repairs and all that before we even closed on the property. But I borrowed I borrowed 110 from the policy, whatever the amount was, plus closing. We borrowed that to close on the property. And 30 days later, those rents in each of those places, the guy was renting them for like $400 a pop. And we said, hey, listen, like rents should have been about 900. And we said, hey, we're going to meet you in the middle. And we talked to the tenants. We said, we are going to take care of all of your issues. We're going to do the upgrades that need to be done if you're willing to stay. But if you go, if you decide to stay, you know, we need to bring rent up about $200, $250. Well, you could say, well, oh man, you're just being a bully as a landlord. No. If they wanted to go anywhere else and get the same comparable house, then they're going to pay 900. So they're still paying less. And so everybody stayed and we now got rents up onto those properties. And I think it actually came up to like $3,200. Okay. So $3,200 a month, our total investment to do the repairs that this guy wasn't willing to do or couldn't do or whatever was like $2,500. So we're all in on this thing for like 115. We're now getting $3,200 a month. We're all in for whatever I said, 115 or so. And 6 months later, we refinanced the property. Guess what kind of valuation we got for those four properties that we paid 110 plus the repairs? Any guess? Anybody?
I can't answer. I know the answer.
No clue. No clue whatsoever.
Let me do the math. So we were able to pull out 75%. Let me just do the math. So we got valuation of $280,000. So what did I do, right? Being a good banker, I was able to refinance, take all of that money, put it back into my policy. And now I'm like, all right, where do we go from here? Let's do it again. When's the next one? So how do I use it? I'll kind of cut to the chase here. Like sometimes we use our own money in our business. And then sometimes we use hard money. Sometimes we have private investors who want to be in on the deal or want to return. And then sometimes I use my policy. It just depends where we're at, what cash flow looks like, and what makes sense, right? So I can then take a 10% return. So when I'm borrowing that money for my 5.5%, I'm actually still making money on that investment in addition to the other money that I got, right, from the refi and all the equity. So I was able to extract all that money plus pay my policy back, and the interest was covered. So I'm getting a little bit of arbitrage there. I'm getting able to close on the deal, get all that equity, get cash flow, then pour it back into my policy, and I'm ready to go again. So then the next deal, okay, so I don't give you guys a chance to talk. I go right to the next deal. A land deal that I'm closing, today's the 24th, in 2 days. Bought it for $85,000. I'm all in for like 92 with additional fees and whatever. $220,000. The buyer's paying 220. So took a loan against the policy, bought that piece of land for $85,000, and we're closing on it, and we're going to make $120,000 or 100, whatever it is, profit net. And so these are two really good examples. They're not always that big, right? You can do it for whatever you want. You can do it for a rental property and burr it like we did. You can invest in a land deal and take, you know, the 10%, 12%. But those are two examples where for us, it was like, dude, we've got so much money deployed everywhere where it's like, okay, well, simple. Just pull from the policy. And when we, you know, when we're able to close on it, we pay the policy back. Voila, now I'm ready to do it again.
Awesome. So I have two thoughts from what you just shared. So in our practice, we are authorized practitioners through the Nelson Nash Institute for Infinite Banking. We were at the annual event for practitioners, and they pulled the entire audience, which was hundreds of coaches across the country. The two overwhelming terms were the question was, if you could only use one word or phrase for this concept, what would it be? First one was freedom, overwhelming. The next was peace of mind. I heard both of those things as you were kind of telling your story. But one thing that people get so hung up on when you start talking about whole life insurance is they're focused on the internal rate of return, basically. They're like, because they're trying to compare it to other investments and everything that's out there. And we try to help them understand that this is not do whole life insurance and don't do anything else. It's do whole life insurance and do all the other things that you want to do. But now you've created this environment that you actually have some control over. From just those deals that you've done, if all you knew was that your policy is growing every day, do you even care about the internal rate of return at this point?
Don't care about it. Don't care about it. Cause for me, what's more important? Store of liquidity, right? It's out of the banking system. So as you said, freedom, control. If I need a loan and I need to close on a deal next week, okay, I can just, you know, push a button and then the money will be in my account either tomorrow or the next day. It's like 24 to 48 hours, at least with the company that I currently have. And so that money is accessible to me. And if I want to pay it back in a week or in a year, I can do that. So now I have control. And I also know that, oh yes, by the way, that money is still growing uninterrupted in perpetuity, essentially, is the way I look at it. I'm not going to mess with this. I'm going to keep the policy in place. It's going to keep growing. And so now I'm double dipping. So think of it like this. For all those people that are concerned about the internal rate of return, if they're not going to do anything with their policy, that might be one thing. Okay. Then that's a different story. But if you have any plans to buy a business, to generate additional cash flow, maybe you want to lend on some deals and you're going to get the 10 or 12% as a private lender. Now all of a sudden it's like, dude, it's total game changer. It doesn't matter because now you're making money twice and you've got arbitrage and your policy is growing. It's the whole velocity of money concept. For me personally, I would challenge anyone that thinks that way as number one, you're being way too small-minded and you're not seeing the big picture. Because for me, it's like, well, wait a second here. I just took money that's just sitting there. It's still growing. Okay. And I borrowed a percentage from it, but I'm actually still making money on top of that money that I'm borrowing, right? My borrowing costs, I'm making money to cover that and some. And then in addition, guess what? I just added $3,200 a month in cash flow. And what did I say? $206,000 or whatever that I just pulled back out, right? And then put the $110,000 back into the policy. So now I'm still left with almost $100,000. So you do the numbers on that.
I think that this would absolutely destroy any internal rate of return analysis and would say, hey, holy crap, like, if you're not saying, how do I get into those deals? I think you have a problem, or you don't understand finances. That's just my opinion. So there's deals like this all over the place. There's so many ways. If you talk to someone that's doing it, and listen, I'm not an expert in this regard, but I'm a little bit savvy. I'm a little bit resourceful, but I'm like, hey, you know what? If I can build equity and cash flow, and I'm getting arbitrage on my money, like, isn't that the holy grail? Because people are like, oh, cash flow is better than equity. Okay, great. But what if I can do both? Isn't that even better yet? And oh yeah, by the way, I'm making money on the borrowing of my policy. Like, dude, anybody that's not seeing this and understanding it and saying, why didn't I sign up for one of these yesterday? Like, you're nuts. Because this is to me the greatest secret. And it's not even a secret. It's a turbocharger, man. It's fuel. And so I get excited about this, because when I see people not doing this or people saying it's a scam, I'm like, dude, you're nuts. You don't know what you're talking about. Let's get on a phone call, or let's get together and I'll show you how I use it. And oh yeah, by the way, whole life is not an investment. It's a store of your wealth, man. It's like a savings. For me, it's savings with the ability to do whatever I want, invest it, buy a new car and pay that down, whatever it is, doesn't matter. But I'm my own bank, and I feel like I'm trying to get to this point of like, there's these people that talk about, they use the term like sovereignty, right? Like sovereign wealth or sovereign whatever, freedom or whatever. That's kind of what I'm trying to do, is to be able to say, hey, I can operate within the banking system, but I can operate outside of the banking system. And so I'm trying to invest in assets, to have the cash flow, to have the different ways to generate income that, you know, I can play in a good economy, in a bad economy. And when the bad economy comes, dude, I've got options. When it's a good economy, hey, great, that's fine. I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. So I'm just, I don't know. I just look at this strategically and say, this is one of the biggest game changers in my life and in my business. And my wife, who doesn't even invest in real estate, is like, Jeremy, when are we going to get those kids policies? I'm like, Brock, when are we going to get those kids policies? You should be pushing me on that. Right. I mean, like, it's so we've got two policies. We need to get four more for our kids. And now my wife's even like, hey, is there a way, like, we've got some extra money, can we get like another policy on me, or how should we structure this? I'm like, I don't know. You need to talk to Brock. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, I'm one of the biggest advocates of this, because when you know how it works and you see it in real life, it's a no-brainer. I mean, it's the dumbest thing, in my opinion, not to have it. I mean, you're missing out. So I don't know. Maybe I'm drinking too much Kool-Aid, but I love it.
I think you're right on it. Well, if you could tell us if you could leave our audience with one thing, 30 seconds or less, one thing to tell them, what would that be?
About policies or real estate?
About anything.
Oh, shoot. If I can tell your audience one thing about anything, if it's real estate, make more offers.
Okay.
That's key. If it's whole life policies, if you don't have one, you need to get one. I don't know. That's maybe not great advice, but honestly, I see people trying to do real estate and I'm like, dude, have you made an offer? No. Are you doing marketing? No. Well, then you're not doing real estate, because real estate is all about generating leads and making offers and then following up. If you do those three things as a real estate investor who does, I don't know, about 100 deals a year, I can tell you that we as human beings, we tend to complicate things, but it's actually really easy. If you do those things, then you're going to get deals. I don't care how terrible you are at selling or making offers. If you do it, you're going to get better, just like anything else. And eventually, dude, there's going to be low hanging fruit. You don't realize there's some people who go and compete with us on deals, and they have no idea what they're doing. They don't even know how to make offers. They don't even know how to value a property. And then when our team goes in there, they're like, oh my gosh, like, this other guy came in, they offered her, they made this crazy offer, or they told us we need to do this, or they didn't really seem like they knew what we were doing. And so, yeah, man, I think we just, you know, you gotta be able to go and make offers and follow up with people. So sorry for rambling, but
no, I can talk
forever about this stuff, man. And if you want me to get louder and faster, I'll do it.
Awesome.
Jeremy, man, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story today. I think it's been really valuable, for me, I know it's going to be really valuable for our audience. The really cool thing about everything that you heard today is that if you're interested in having a whole life strategy like Jeremy talked about, we are experts in that. Reach out to us. We will teach you. We will show you. And whether you're in real estate or maybe you're a business owner, we work with a lot of business owners, and this can be a very valuable piece to any business owner's cash flow strategy as far as how they manage their money and stuff like that. So again, Jeremy, thank you so much for being here today. I really enjoy getting to know you a little bit. I think our audience is going to love getting to know you a little bit. If someone wanted to reach out to you, where would be the best place for them to find you?
Either find me on Facebook, Jeremy Resmer. I mean, there's not a lot of Resmers out there, so you'll be able to find me that way. Or dude, just call or text me. I tell people this all the time, like, dude, I don't care. Call me. I love talking shop. I love talking about whole life and how it applies in my business. I love talking real estate, marketing, whatever. Doesn't matter, whatever you're struggling with. If I can help, I'd love to. 615-670-8153. That's my cell. Facebook, or, call or message me. I'll give you the time of day. If I don't answer, I'll get back with you within, 24 hours for sure. And, would love to chat. So.
Awesome.
Well, we hope y'all enjoyed this episode. We hope you have a blessed one, and we'll talk to you on the next one.